The Fan on Demand.
We've traded a Jeff for a Jeff, along with a draft pick, a player to be named later, a bag of balls, a ham sandwich, and a new suit. Now Jeff Samet guest hosts the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Just saying to Lance Kennedy, our technical director, that the first time I ever hosted a radio show, this song was playing. It was 18 years ago. Ah, come on. 1102 Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Jeff Samet with you until noon. In for Jeff Blair. Baseball Central on deck. Sam Cosentino, Dirk Hayhurst, going to have Roberto Alomar in studio. Later this hour, Mike Cameron's going to join us, the former Seattle Mariner. We'll talk about the Suzuki deal with him, the Ichiro Suzuki deal, of course. And I'm going to have a special guest with Cameron as well. I'm going to surprise him. Ray Fossey will join us as the hour continues as well. Towards the end of the hour, Oakland A's TV color analyst, two-time World Series champ, two-time Gold Glove catcher, the Red Hot A's, who have won five straight games, all by one run, by the way, which is very interesting. So we'll talk to Ray about that later on to find out a bit more about this Oakland A's team that is just red hot right now. So Ryan Dempster, is he leaving the Cubs? Is he leaving the Cubs for the Braves? Will Matt Garza be able to be dealt by the July 31st trade deadline? All valid questions that we're going to have for WGN's Jordan Bernfield, who joins us right now on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. And Jordan, a deal is or was in place for Dempster and agreed upon by both the Braves and the Cubs. Dempster just had to turn his key. What happened there?
Well, Jeff, first of all, thanks for having me on. From
Thank
what
you.
I've been told and from people I've spoken to, it appears that a deal was agreed upon. The problem was that it got leaked to the media. Ryan Dempster didn't like that and then sort of got upset about it, and then therefore it appears that he didn't want to make that trade go through. Dempster certainly knows that he's going to be traded. He understands the situation. He said as much, and I think that he's one of the classier players that has been on the Cubs in a long time. But because he has 10-5 rights, he can choose where he wants to go. And I believe, based on people I've talked to, that he did agree originally to go to Atlanta in the trade yesterday, but then somehow something in the 11th hour caused him to pull back on the reins there, and he did not end up with the Braves yesterday. I still think it's possible that he may end up giving the trigger to go ahead and go to Atlanta. There was a deal reportedly agreed upon. I'm still hearing that the Dodgers are a possibility. And then I did see a report this morning that Dempster would still even be interested in the Yankees, although I don't know that New York has necessarily the young players that the Cubs would be interested to pull off a deal like that. But I think part of this is that Dempster would hope to get an extension, and if he could get a couple of years as an extension as part of the trade, I think that would make it more appealing to him wherever he does end up. And I think it's going to happen in the next couple of days, but it's just a matter of who and when.
See, the deal with the Braves, I find intriguing, or at least why it didn't happen. That is really puzzling to me, that for some reason he decided against going to the Braves. I mean, do you really think it's because the media got a hold of it?
Well, that's one thing that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not in Atlanta with the team right now, so I can't ask him personally. But what I can tell you is that, you know, I think that he wants this to happen on his own terms. I think that he would like for his Cubs career to end the way he wants it to end. And I think that's probably something that could be fueling it just a little bit. I will say that I think that he is a guy who, like I said, understands the situation of what the Cubs are trying to do with Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer trying to rebuild this franchise and trying to get younger. When you have a 35-year-old free agent pitcher who's making $14 million this season, as Dempster is, you have to move him and try to get some young players for him. Now, the deal that the Cubs had proposed yesterday to Atlanta that was reportedly agreed upon would have netted the Cubs 22-year-old Randall Delgado, who was a Baseball America top 41 prospect. And I think that it was a impressive deal on the Cubs standpoint when you consider that Dempster is at least at minimum a rental, and that they would have netted a young, promising pitcher in Randall Delgado. But in saying that, I think that Dempster certainly wants the Cubs to get a good deal out of this. He's been very supportive of the Cubs and their pursuit to trade him. But for whatever reason, and we may never know exactly how the events transpired, Dempster just decided that that wasn't for him and then went to his Twitter account and said he doesn't know where the trade came from and that there was no trade. Mm-hmm.
If this were to play out, let's say Dempster is dealt, remains a free agent, becomes one at the end of the season, could you see him coming back to the Cubs? Like, would he want to go back? Would the Cubs want him back?
I think the Cubs would want him back, and I could see him wanting to come back because he's been a very important part of the Cubs franchise since he came here 9 years ago. Jim Hendry originally brought him in coming off of arm surgery to try to rehab his way back onto the team. Then he became the closer for this team. He's had a number of different roles, then had the brilliant year in 2008 in which he went 17-4 and earned himself a 5-year contract. I mean, this guy really has had kind of a whirlwind, but a pretty successful career with the Cubs, and one that I think Cub fans have found him to be a very likable and engaging player, and he's always been one of the most popular players on this Cubs team. I think, though, that if he does get an extension with the team that he eventually gets traded to, that may prolong it, but it wouldn't surprise me if either he got traded and then eventually decided to come back to Chicago, or even if he were to sign an extension somewhere else, that he may not, if he decides to pitch after that, may not want to end his career with the Cubs because he's got his foundation here. He's got a lot of family ties here now because his kids have grown up here in the summers and whatnot. And so I think that certainly is a possibility for him down the road.
Jordan Bernfield of WGN with us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Jeff Samet in for Jeff Blair. Jordan, Dempster has the league's best ERA at 2.11, had 33 consecutive scoreless innings this season, had a 4.80 ERA last year. What has been working for him this year?
Well, I mean, I think his control has been excellent this season, and I think that Dempster has always been a guy with the ability to maybe not pitch this well, but be a very, very effective National League pitcher. And I think that what you're seeing from him is his ability to throw strikes in ways that he hasn't always in the past. You know, he had a start recently in St. Louis where he gave up 3 runs in the first inning to end that 33 consecutive scoreless inning streak. And he told us after the game that he felt that he was throwing too many pitches down the middle. He was joking about it, but his location really has been very important to him, and keeping that ball down has really been a key for Ryan Dempster. And he has a lot of downward movement on his pitches, and when he's able to keep the ball down and keep it in the locations that he wants, he's able to get a lot of outs and be very effective. He doesn't have the greatest stuff in the world, but he's a very smart pitcher, and he's very good with location. And when that gets away from him, he starts to struggle. So I think it's been very interesting to watch him pitch this year because he's been so incredibly efficient and so good at keeping that ball down. And I think that should he continue to do that this year, wherever he goes, he can be a really important part of the team that's trying to get to the playoffs.
Give us an update on Matt Garza. He has tricep soreness in his right arm, not expected to make his next start. Will he land on the DL?
Well, I don't think he's going to end up on the DL, Jeff. I think that he will probably make his next start. I think that the injury that he suffered a couple of days ago in St. Louis was just some right tricep cramping. I don't think it was anything too serious. The Cubs do not expect him to end up on the DL, and I believe that the Cubs are hoping that he'll be able to make his next start. They may have to skip him a day or whatnot, but they plan to have him go. There is some speculation that Matt Garza may be moved one day later in his spot in the rotation, which presumably would be to trade him. So if they move him a day later, it's possible that they move Garza a day later. What's interesting to me, Jeff, is when you look at the events of yesterday and how it potentially affected the Garza market. We saw Anibal Sanchez get traded from the Miami Marlins to the Detroit Tigers, and I think that what's significant about that is that Jacob Turner was the return in the deal. There had been rumors about Jacob Turner and Matt Garza in a trade together between the Cubs and Tigers back before the season started, I think even before spring training last winter. So the fact that the Cubs did not trade him to Detroit evidently means that they didn't value Turner the way the Miami Marlins organization did, and it probably means that they're holding out for potentially the Los Angeles Dodgers to part with a guy like Zach Lee, their top pitching prospect. The Cubs have been trying to get as much pitching into the organization as possible since the new regime took over, and it wouldn't surprise me to see a trade to the Dodgers happen because the Dodgers have some desirable pitching prospects, including Lee. If he ends up somewhere else, I think it's going to be for pitching because, to me, no matter what the regime says, they have been very consistent in saying that they want to get as much pitching into the system as possible, and I think that's what's going to dictate the Matt Garza deal.
Well, Garza not going to Detroit, in Detroit trading instead with the Marlins, might that suggest as well that Detroit was scared off by Garza's possible unhealthiness?
Yeah, potentially, but I think also, Jeff, that when you look at it, I think that if a team wants Matt Garza, they know what they're getting from him. And the other thing is, he's not a rental. He's a guy that's under team control for the following season. So if you trade for Matt Garza, I think it's a move, yes, that is made to try to improve yourself for this season. But I also think that a move like that is something that you make for a future season as well. Matt Garza still being under team control makes him relatively cheap given the performance that he's been able to put forth the last few years. Now, I know that his record isn't anything to write home about, and he had a struggle for about a month after he came back from a brief injury in late May where he was trying to get his leg back under him, but he's pitched a lot better as of late, and so I think that a team that looks at him, you know, with the Dempster situation, it's strictly you're trying to bring in a veteran guy who can help you down the stretch. And if Dempster is able to work out an extension before the trade, then good for him. But I don't think teams look at him as a building block for much more than another year or two. When it comes to Dempster, when it comes to Garza, because he's still a young pitcher, I do think that if he continues to improve as a pitcher, teams are looking at him as a potential cornerstone or big piece of their starting rotation for the future. So I think that's why the Cubs are holding out hope that they can get a huge value for him. And even though Jacob Turner was considered at least to be one of the top prospects that was available, I think the Cubs are going to hope at least that if they trade Garza, they get the best top prospect available.
WGN's Jordan Bernfield. Great stuff, Jordan. I really appreciate this. Thanks a lot.
No problem, Jeff, anytime.
Later this hour, Ray Fosse will join us, but I wonder what a former Seattle Mariner and teammate of Ichiro Suzuki feels about Suzuki now being a Yankee. Talk to Mike Cameron about that. Going to welcome a special guest onto the show as well with Mike. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Ichiro Suzuki is now a member of the New York Yankees. Funny how the Yankees in town in Seattle to get ready for a series against the Mariners, and this deal happens, and Ichiro ends up with the Yankees. And very strange as a fan to see him coming out of the visiting dugout in Seattle and with the Yankees. Very odd. And seeing him hit eighth as well. And it's odd for me. I can imagine how a former teammate would feel about that. Here's former Seattle Mariner Mike Cameron, who joins us on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Mike, you patrolled center field for years with the Mariners, and you had Ichiro Suzuki to your left playing right field. I can imagine how odd it was for you to see him with the New York Yankees.
Yeah, man, I was, pretty shocked to see that happen, because I thought he was a long lifer Mariner guy, man. So to actually see him go over to the Yankees, it just kind of shocked me even more so. But in retrospect, though, I mean, it gives him an opportunity to get back to the playoffs and try to make a run at it here in his latter part of his career, you know. So, and if there's one guy that can, you know, go over and have an impact, because his bat plays just about everywhere, because he's a tough out, and his hand-eye coordination, he still puts the bat on the ball and runs very well. So he's just another integral piece that they added over there to try to help those guys out now.
And Mike, seeing Suzuki with the Yankees and he's hitting eighth. I mean, the entire time with the Mariners, he hit first and for a little bit of time third. Eighth. He's hitting eighth. That's incredible.
It's crazy. that lineup is it's long. Their lineup is long. They got a lot of tough outs over there, and the fact that they added Ichiro, it adds another piece over there, man, where it makes it tough on the pitchers to be able to get things done. He doesn't take a lot of pitches like the other guys on that team over there does, but he puts a bat on everything. He puts pressure on the defense because he can run, he sprays the ball around the field, and probably the biggest thing is him just adding another dimension of speed over there that they lost in Brett Gardner.
Yeah, that's right. And I want you to talk about how much he was loved in Seattle. I mean, you were there, you witnessed it, especially there in the heyday, just amidst all the craze for Ichiro. Talk about that and how he's just so loved in Seattle.
Yeah, Ichiro, very big, and not only is the all of the communities in Seattle, but very big in the Japanese community, and what he represented for those guys. And that was another reason why I didn't think he would leave Seattle, because of the Japanese owner there, you know, close ties to that guy. Mm-hmm. And I thought that he would be always, you know, that one guy that kind of stands there out in Seattle through thick and thin. But obviously, with him being a 10-5 guy, he has a chance that he decided it was time for him to move on, and it kind of just does everybody's favors. You know, Ichiro gets a chance to move on and compete for a playoff spot, and the fact that the Seattle Mariners now, they don't have to go into next year try to make sure we fit Ichiro in, you know, given his stature in Seattle, and not kind of just throw him to the side, you know, as they do a lot of guys. You know, although he's a fading star, he's still a very, very, very big piece of what he was in Seattle. So they can start to move on now and turn that lineup over, get some guys in there or whatever. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how well he does. He's going to play left field because they, you know, they still have Swisher playing right field. But give Joe Girardi some opportunities to move the lineup around and when he wants to, when he felt like he could put Ichiro at the top, move Jeter back to two, and stretch the lineup out like that if he wants to. So they got a good player, man. They got a good player. You know, although he's an older player, he's still a good baseball player. He's a veteran that's been through it before.
Mike Cameron with us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Jeff Sammet. Mike, talk about what the difference is between right field and left field. I think that's something that is taken for granted. And we've seen Ichiro play a bit of center field as well. But talk about their transition? Because when Nick Swisher comes back, you would think that he's going to be getting the lion's share of right field, and we'll see Ichiro in left. Talk about what that transition is like and how Ichiro would be able to adapt.
It's tough when you change positions because you work so hard at a craft and in one particular place. The biggest thing in him would be, the balls traveling, from a right-handed bat now, opposed to there's a lot more right-handers in the league than there is left-handers. And, him having a bigger space over there in left field at Yankee Stadium and him having to learn the other side of the field and all the other stadiums over there, which he had kind of crafted very well, playing in the American League. Now, in right field, now he has to go over and try to do that in a very short time and doing that in left field. So it'll be good for him, man. Ichiro is used to playing every day. I want to see how that plays out, because they got some other players over there with being Andrew Jones and,
Ibanez.
Ibanez. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it plays out, man. But, I'm looking for him to kind of pick up his game a little bit with him being added to this team. Now he senses that he has something to really strive for later on in the year.
Now, I want to talk about him going from Seattle to New York. And certainly he seemed to have handled all the pressure that comes with playing in Seattle and the notoriety that he would bring. Seems like he handled that very well. Now, you had gone from Seattle to New York as well.
Yeah.
Talk about
yeah.
what that transition is like as well and how Ichiro would handle that transition.
Well, the one thing about it is with him going to New York, he doesn't have to do anything but be himself because he has still got Jeter, Cano, A-Rod, and Teixeira.
Yeah, Granderson, sure.
And Granderson. So he just kind of fits his little mold in and try to mold in and, play his game, going to New York, I don't think Ichiro has any problem with being able to handle the pressure because he's had to shoulder the pressure of being that guy coming from Japan for the longest and trying to be, that star, having that staying star power, But it is a different environment when you go play in New York, man. You are the center of attention on many levels. And when you play for the Yankees, it's like that everywhere you go. So I'm looking forward to do good, though, in a sense, because he still has that, that's just as big of a Japanese community over in New York as it is in Seattle. So him having that opportunity to do it now in New York, man, is only going to give himself a bigger chance to be who Ichiro really is. We used to see an Ichiro hit 320. I don't know if he's going to be that guy or not, but I expect him to get back up to 300 now with him having a lot more guys in the lineup to hit around him so he can go out and do his thing and, take shape with that New York Yankee team.
We see that he still uses a translator. As far as how good a teammate he was, talk about that and what that language barrier would do with having a teammate that doesn't speak English.
I think Ichiro uses the translator so he doesn't get anything twisted up, as of now. The guy speaks just as good as English as me and you. I guess it would be more the understanding part of the different type of questions. But on their team, they have all type, they got Hiroki Kuroda over there. It's a very big Japanese community in New York. So, I'm sure he always used to love to go to New York, and I think that it's only going to make it better. He always plays well in Yankee Stadium, and the fact that he gets a chance to play there every day now with some of those guys that got on that team there, I think he'll do just fine, man.
Mike, I got a confession for you. I was going to surprise you with a surprise guest this morning, but we can't get a hold of him for some reason. When I was exchanging tweets with you last night in getting you on the show, I texted Jose Cruz Jr. and I said, "Hey, Mike Cameron's coming on. You got to come on and bug him." And he goes, "Oh, I can't wait to do that." And now he's not able to join us because we can't get a hold of him. So he owes me big time. You need to, while he's not here, to punish him.
Yeah.
I need a good Jose Cruz Jr. story that I could throw back in his face for when I get him on the air again.
Cruz, he was always still try to be very smart, man. He tried to be very smart. We were teammates over in San Diego. The guy actually turned me on to one of the best wines that you could possibly have. And, you know, to this day, I still drink it. He was a guy that introduced me to the iPhone. You know, I don't really have anything bad to say about Cruz himself. His sarcasm every once in a while.
He's super competitive. Like fantasy football, he's just annoying about it.
Oh, man. That's another thing. He will annoy the heck out of you, man. But, you know, we kind of came up at the same time. I think I was a year earlier than Cruiser, and we played against each other when he was in Seattle and I was with the White Sox. And, you know, and then we got an opportunity to play against – I played against him all the time, and, you know, him being in Toronto. And then I finally got a chance to play with him in San Diego, man. So we had the best of times, man. He was very, very – a very good teammate. But he was always trying to tell you what to do, how to do it, like he knew everything that was going on. And we still had Twitter battles down, you know, every time I could run into him and everything. So, but we're good friends, man. Cruz, I feel like I've known him a lot longer than the 1 year we played, you know, other than playing against each other. But, you know, he's good, man. He's good.
He's a very, very easy person to like, Mike. And next time we have you on, we'll make sure we get him on. He stiffed us this time, but he's not going to get away with it next time.
He used to call me something in Spanish all the time because I used to hate playing day games. And he would always get on me about being grumpy on day games or whatever. And so he would always come in and, you know, he knew I would be kind of grumpy on day games or whatever and just get on my nerves, drag me to death. You know, I'll be laying on the trans table getting a massage or whatever, and he'll be all in my ear all the time, and I wanted to fight him most of the time. But, you know, we would end up going out to dinner. This guy was one of the biggest going out to dinner people I ever met in my life, and ordering bottles of wine, man.
Yeah.
He turned me on. Things, man. I love him to death, man.
Yeah,
he's been cool.
He's a great guy, and it sounds like he hasn't changed. Mike Cameron, I really appreciate your time this morning. Let's do it again soon. And next time, again, it'll be with Jose Cruz Jr. Thanks, pal.
No doubt about it, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks. There's Mike Cameron, former Seattle Mariner, and they'll talk about the Suzuki deal from the Mariners to the Yankees on Baseball Central.
Now, more of the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Jeff Sammet. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's 11:42, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hoping to connect with Ray Fosse, Oakland A's TV color analyst, but in the meantime, it gives us an opportunity to explore this rumor. Bob Nightingale of USA Today reporting that the Athletics have jumped into trade talks for Marlins third baseman Hanley Ramirez joining the Red Sox and your Toronto Blue Jays. Interesting. Again, Bob Nightingale of USA Today reports that the Oakland Athletics have jumped into trade talks for Marlins third baseman Hanley Ramirez joining the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. Now, the A's are dead last in the majors with a .228 batting average, ranked 27th in runs scored. So they'll likely need to add a bat if they hope to sustain a run at the playoffs. Now, Toronto Blue Jays host the Oakland A's tonight at the Rogers Center, game one of a three-game series. We'll have it for you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and for you to see on Sportsnet. Oakland A's TV color analyst, two-time All-Star, two-time Gold Glove-winning catcher, and two-time World Series champion Ray Fosse joins us on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And Ray, just discussing a rumor that's come across here in the A's apparent interest in Hanley Ramirez of the Miami Marlins. Want to get your reaction to that?
First time I've heard about that. I know his name's been thrown around. First of all, good morning. I hope
good morning.
All is well in beautiful city of Toronto. A little warmth up, a little warm up here.
Oh boy! And today's nothing. It's been like in the mid 30 degrees Celsius, Mark. So it's today's actually been quite refreshing.
Well, I took a walk this morning. It was a little cool after getting in last night. Quite humid, but nice to get up to Toronto for the first time. But you know, to answer your question, and I heard you prior to mentioning Hanley Ramirez about the bat, I just have to remind people that the one plus positive about the A's throughout the history, and I go back to the early 70s playing with the championship teams there in the late 80s, early 2000s, pitching. It's what it's all about. And reading about some of the players that pitchers have stepped up while certain guys have been on the disabled list for the Blue Jays, and John Farrell, an excellent manager, former pitching coach, I can appreciate, and I'm sure he can appreciate the importance of pitching. And that's the reason the A's are having the success they are right now. And to add a bat, I'm sure Ramirez at shortstop, that has been an area of concern for the Athletics, because Cliff Pennington, while he's a great shortstop defensively, he has not swung the bat as well. And now with Eric Sogard coming up, with Cliff on the disabled list, Brandon Hicks has been with the ball club since he was picked up. But you know, there's sometimes that a team needs to make a trade to satisfy the players in the clubhouse at the trading deadline. However, I don't know if this is the case. This club is playing well beyond expectations. The club was looking for 2014 as being a time when maybe all these young players would start gelling. 17 rookies on a ball club, 10 at one time. Rookie starting pitchers. It's phenomenal watching this team play on a daily basis, but I still have to go back to pitching. Right now, the strength of this ball club is pitching. If it continues, then they have a chance, because they don't have to score a lot of runs,
right?
As verified by the previous championships.
Right, and if anybody would know the great Oakland A's pitching, it would be you, and not even from your many, many years of broadcasting, but in just focusing in on your playing days in 1973, you had 3 20-game winners in 73 with the A's, who this season boasts the AL's top pitching staff. Pitchers like Tommy Malone with 9 wins, 86 strikeouts, and Ryan Cook with 10 saves and a 1.70 ERA. The staff near the top of the league in ERA. Did you foresee at the beginning of the year, Ray, that this club would be able to pitch with as much success as they have?
Absolutely not. There's no way, because I was among many who, when Billy Beane made the trades in the offseason, trading Trevor Cahill, an all-star, 2 years ago, 18-game winner. Gio Gonzalez, to me, is a 20-game winner waiting to happen. And Andrew Bailey, unfortunate, the injury with his thumb, not necessarily his elbow, which caused him to miss some time last year for the A's. When you trade 3 all-stars and you're getting potential, you're getting prospects, nobody knows what they're going to do. But having seen Tommy Malone pitch, tremendous changeup. Jared Parker, who could not throw a strike in spring training because, as he admitted, he was nervous coming to a new organization, he has stepped in. So basically, left-handed changeup from Malone, right-handed changeup from Parker, 2 outstanding pitches. And then, of course, A.J. Griffin, who speaks 3 languages, Spanish, French, and English, a kid who loves to pitch. You have Griffin, Malone, and Parker allowing 1 walk and giving up hardly anything to the world champion, one of the best hitting teams in baseball, the New York Yankees. Phenomenal. So nobody expected it, but I think we're all very pleased.
And we're going to see Travis Blackley for the A's tonight, who's on the mound against Brett Cecil. He's 2-2 in 8 starts this season, a 3.36 ERA. What might we see from him tonight?
Well, first of all, you're going to be a little bit surprised when you see him take the mound and start the game out of the stretch. He was a reliever, converted to starter, and he started in Minnesota, his first start around Memorial Day holiday, and pitched well. And I'll admit this, everybody thought that he was acquired, picked up on waivers from the Giants, to simply fill in a little bit in the bullpen, go to AAA because the AAA team in Sacramento was lacking of starting pitching. All he has done is stepped in, especially with Brandon McCarthy on the disabled list. Brett Anderson waited to come back, as well as Dallas Braden. He's done a phenomenal job. He has a tremendous pickoff move. He actually picked off Elvis Andrus in Oakland while the Rangers were in town. He froze him at first base. He pointed balk, and he was called a balk, which he didn't balk. He had a better move that time. So a great move. He mixes his pitches well, sneaky fastball. But don't be surprised when he takes the mound in the first inning and he's pitching out of the stretch, because that's the way he's always done, especially starting for the Athletics. And he's done a very good job, because you think about it, minimizes some of the problems a pitcher might have in his windup. He pitches directly out of the stretch, and it's helped him. He's a good pitcher.
Are you surprised that doesn't happen more often across baseball?
I think it's more of I just don't think starters want to start out of the stretch. It's almost like they're saying, I'm not that good out of the windup. And so it's perceived to be, I have to start out of the windup. But I believe a lot of times, and I remember the great Greg Maddux, first ballot Hall of Famer, he would throw the majority of his warm-up tosses, the eight they get in between innings, out of the stretch. Why? Because he said those are the most critical pitches that you have to make with runners on base. Well, Blackley starts that way. Yu Darvish also is doing that, coming over from Japan. So we had Darvish and Blackley going head-to-head, both starting pitchers, started the game out of the stretch. Very, very unusual.
Yeah, and I've seen the Miguel Bautista do that this year with the Mets before as well.
Yes.
Now, the A's won five straight games, each by a margin of one run, for the first time in franchise history. There's something magical about a team that either comes from behind or wins very close games. Are you feeling that with this year's club?
10 years ago, coincidentally, the A's won 20 consecutive games. And I must be honest with you, watching these games this past week, the biggest to me was Wednesday against the Rangers, because if the A's lost that one, then they knew they had to face the Yankees four games. And they've starting the homestand 0-2 would have been tough. To win that game and then all of a sudden play the Yankees, where everybody was concerned about the A's playing great, but you're facing the two best teams in the American League, the Rangers and the Yankees, and the A's won 5 of 6. I'm seeing a lot of, no matter where they are in the game, down by 4 runs Sunday to the Hall, really probably a future Hall of Famer and Cy Young Award winner CeCe Sabathia, couple of home runs all of a sudden, a miscue by a shortstop, Seth Smith hits a home run off Soriano, who had not given up a home run all season. It's a tie game. And then Coco Chris hits a ball that he should never even swung at and gets a base hit after Jamal Weeks more or less sacrificed with one out in extra innings. So all these things, and then all of a sudden the A's win, and you say, wow, something special is happening. But there's a lot of confidence. To me, that's the thing. And I cannot end this interview or start to end it thinking that we have to give Bob Melvin a lot of credit. The A's manager, to me, a lot of managers lose more than they win. I've said it since day one. Bob Melvin will win more as a manager than he will lose. He's done a phenomenal job. These guys want to play for him, and he believes that until the last out, you're not out of the game. That's a great way to go into it.
Ray Fossey with us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Jeff Sammet. Ray, you know, in getting back to trade talk, do you feel that the A's would have to make a trade to somehow try and keep up with the Angels and Rangers, who might upgrade as well?
You know, they're going to upgrade, but I have to admit, they have money. The A's are second lowest payroll in all of baseball, next to the Pirates, who coincidentally are playing extremely well.
Yeah.
And sometimes, again, you mess up chemistry just to make a move. Now, Hanley Ramirez obviously would be a tremendous asset. There's you know, he's a great player defensively, offensively, and probably would fit in perfectly. And that would be a huge trade, just a matter of what Billy Beane would have to give up to get him, because it seems like the Marlins are going to be selling, which that has to be disappointing to their fans. But I think an upgrade, you know, to me, I don't want to see the chemistry of this ball club. These guys feel good about themselves, and they feel that it's a 25-man roster. And when Evan Scribner comes in a crucial game, and you don't even know who Evan Scribner is, not a lot of people do. He makes one pitch to Alex Rodriguez, making $30 million, more than half of what our total payroll is, and he gets him out in a big situation. So everybody feels they belong. From 1 to 25, everybody feels they're part of this ball club, and that's special when you have, instead of 3 or 4 guys who feel they're just there taking up a roster spot.
Is this the highest point of the season for the Oakland A's so far?
No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. Considering they were 9 games under 500, and, you know, it's phenomenal what they've done. But the one guy that everybody's talking about, and rightfully so, is Yonas Cespedes. He is a star in the making, a Cuban defector, obviously. He's done a tremendous job. You look at the A's record. About 15 games over 500 when Cespedes is in the lineup. He adds so much in the middle of the lineup, hitting fourth. Josh Reddick says it helps him when he's hitting fourth behind Reddick. And just, you know, he's a raw talent. And you could imagine In spring training, Jeff, he had never seen a changeup. Can you believe that? He came back to the dugout and said to Prieto, what was that pitch? Prieto is his interpreter. He says, that's a changeup, cambio. And he said, what's that? Never saw that in Cuba.
Wow.
So that is amazing.
Wow.
And you know the old philosophy, Jeff, is see ball, hit ball. Too much emphasis is put on scouting reports and what this guy does in certain situations. Cespedes knows no English. He gets by. And when that pitcher releases the ball, baseball says, see the ball, hit the ball, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's a special talent.
Ray, got like 30 seconds tops here, but your reaction to seeing Ichiro Suzuki go from the Mariners to the Yankees?
Shocked, but not shocked. I think the kid wants to win late in his career, and I simply say this, if he had been in U.S. baseball, the record for most hits would be in his hands right now. He's a phenomenal hitter, but I think right now he's going to get the credit that he has been due for 12 years now playing on the big stage in New York. I think it's a great – he's going to have a great finish to this season and really help them get the postseason.
Oakland A's TV color analyst, World Series champ Ray Fossey. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Ray.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks to Jesse Spector as well for joining us, the great Jerry Howarth. And again, you can listen to Jerry tonight at 7 o'clock alongside Alan Ashby and Mike Wilner with the call of the Oakland A's and the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll have it for you on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, you could watch it on Sportsnet as well. Broadcast time there, 6:30. Catherine Garceau, I got to thank her for joining us earlier on. Jordan Burnfield, Mike Cameron, and of course, the great Ray Fossey for joining us. Thanks to you for listening, calling, tweeting, and emailing. You could follow us on Twitter at JeffSammet590. Send us an email, JeffSammet@Sportsnet590.ca. Igor Henriquez and Lance Kennedy. I got to thank our intern as well, John Langdon, for producing the show. I'm Jeff Sammet, back tomorrow morning in for Jeff Blair at 9 a.m. Baseball Central with Sam Cosentino and Dirk Hayhurst is next. Roberto Alomar will be a guest in studio. Stay tuned for that right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And happy 48th birthday, Barry Bonds.